Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
Good evening, listener. You are listening to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. On tonight's edition, we invite you to leave behind your safe reality and descend with us into the frightening depths of the most terrifying imaginations with two audio adaptations of frightening fiction about dire déjà vu and creepy customers. I'm your host, Paul J. McSorley, and tonight and every other Wednesday night, I'll be your guide as we traverse the dimly lit corridors of your darkest dreams. Joining us tonight to help bring to life the frightening fiction of Ryan Major is none other than your host of the evening, Paul J. McSorley. Now get your ticket ready, take your seat in our theater of the minds, and brace yourself. It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Our first tale this evening is written by Ryan Major and performed by Paul J. McSorley. In it, we meet a man stuck in an endless loop of a sinister cycle. Now, without further ado, I present to you, I've Done This Before.
I've done this before. More than 300 times, I think. It's hard to keep track. The current time for me is 5:32 a.m. In 45 minutes and 20 seconds, the thing will push the retracting ladder down from the attic and drop into the hallway. The creature is small but unbelievably fierce. Standing 2.5 feet tall, it is a dense chunk of muscle and sinew. Blistered gray skin stretches tightly over its frame. It has two stubby arms contrasted by long frog-like legs. An anvil-shaped head protrudes from the torso, accented with two glowing pink eyes. Black, glistening teeth fill its cruel mouth. A leather vest and loincloth, accented with human teeth, dangle from its body. Within seconds, it will begin using its blood to draw runic symbols on the floor. I've seen it peel away a dry scab and dab at the purple wound before scrawling its wicked designs. The wood smokes as the wet claw scrawls the hellish message. I usually live longer if I can destroy some of the runes before I make my escape. When the cryptic writing is complete, it will drop to its hands and knees before beginning a guttural chant. I still don't understand what the words mean and likely never will. The last 36 times, I have listened to it closely through the door. I've committed the chant to memory, but have yet to find a translation for it. Not much time for Googling anyway before the mayhem begins. I doubt it is from our world anyway. Even if it was, I have no way of knowing if the spelling is correct. But I'll keep trying. It seems I have all the time in the world.
Zistragdum Rajastrik Dimazurn.
After uttering the chant five times and emitting a bone-rattling roar, the hunt officially begins. If I don't make a preemptive move, the process takes less than 45 seconds after the battle cry. When it first appeared, I was still in bed scrolling mindlessly through a social media application. My bedroom door burst open and the thing sprang onto the bed. It was over before I could react. I can still feel the first time the cold blade slid into my carotid artery. I gazed into those pink eyes and the thing only smiled in return. None of the memories fade. No matter how many times I awaken to relive this day, I remember them all. I've started calling it Hunter. Why not? That's what it does. It isn't stupid by any means, but it is simple to fool at the outset of the hunt. Stuffing pillows under my blanket and hiding behind the door is the only method I've discovered that allows me to get out of my bedroom alive. Hunter flings itself onto the bed and uses a red metal blade to ravage the pillows beneath. I have 10 seconds at the most before he discovers the ruse. Quietly, I'll slide around the open door as Hunter shrieks and rips at the blankets and pillows. This is when I can wipe away a few of the runes. I've gotten pretty good at sliding the hallway rug onto them. It doesn't seem to take much to disrupt their power, so this is a step in the process I use every time. My main concern is to destroy the rune closest to my bedroom door. This seems to make him slower. The less rapidly Hunter can move, the farther away I seem to get. Destroying any of the other markings is just a bonus. I haven't figured out what all of them do quite yet. Sadly, I think I'll have plenty of time to figure it out. I've died around 15 times trying to destroy them all. That's a work in progress. This process isn't perfect. It's difficult to think through the hundreds of variations I've tried previous times while my mind is flooded with fear. I've tried to write notes, but they vanish each time I die and wake up again. This still scares me. I've died hundreds of different ways. Loss of blood, decapitation, disembowelment, suffocation, blunt force trauma. My methods for attempted survival are improving with each attempt. I can't say the same for my mental stability. Escaping the house is the method that always allows me to live the longest, but comes with the greatest cost. Whenever Hunter tracks me through the town, it kills everyone it sees. A trail of viscera and carnage follows behind the beast as it tracks me. I've watched as it cuts, bites, and claws its way through crowds like a hot knife through butter. Those people are less prepared than I am. It's as though I'm allowing a fox into a chicken coop. Their screams and pleas haunt me almost as much as the creature. Even after sacrificing all these unwitting souls, it still finds me. That is the constant. Hundreds die, but I never escape. Knowing that leaving the house always ends in bloodshed, I've decided I have to keep the damn thing in my house. I have no way to know for sure, but one day, this loop surely ends. If I'm right, I couldn't handle knowing all those people died in my cowardly attempt to escape this thing. It only tracks me, so why should others suffer a grisly demise as I scramble to survive? Staying in my house keeps others safe, but cuts my survival time in half at the very least, but I do have more control there. My attempts to hurt or kill Hunter have mostly been ineffective. Kitchen knives don't pierce the thick hide. The old shotgun I keep in the downstairs closet knocks the thing off its feet but deals no lasting damage. I have even bludgeoned it with a crowbar. Hell, I have burnt the house down, but it crawls out of the wreckage and continues its relentless pursuit. 5 deaths ago, things changed for the better. After slipping out of the door as Hunter slashed and ravaged my bed, I slid the rug onto the runes and shot down the stairs as always. As Hunter once again discovered my trick, it tumbled out of my room and began to scramble down the stairs. For the first time that I can remember, its foot slipped and it began to fall head over foot to the landing below. My pulse was rapid and my throat tight as I watched the ugly thing roll down the final few steps and slam into the wall. The red blade slipped from its grip and skittered across the floor to my foot. It was already pushing itself back off the floor when I picked up the blade and pointed it toward the beast. Our eyes locked and Hunter bared his black teeth in a sneer. The pink eyes darted from my gaze to the slender knife now in my hand. Countless times, this weapon had taken my life. I could almost feel the combined weight of all my deaths in the blade. My hand throbbed as I held it steady toward Hunter. Its powerful legs retracted and pushed off against the floor, causing the thing to fly through the air in my direction. I drew the red blade above my head and brought it down in a wide arc as Hunter grew closer. It connected with an outstretched arm and sliced through. The blade continued through the muscle and bone and slammed to a stop against the leather vest of Hunter's torso. For the second time, it fell to the floor. Purple blood oozed from the severed arm and the floor began to smoke as it pooled. Shrieks and ragged pants shook my eardrums as the wounded thing on the floor shuddered in pain. The startled reaction didn't last as long as I had hoped. Claws gouged the floor as Hunter shuffled backward to make room between us. I trained the knife in its direction as it retreated. Once it was comfortably removed from my reach, it began to laugh. The remaining hand slid into a pouch tethered to the loincloth. Hunter retrieved a handful of black powder and rubbed it onto the stump where its arm had been. The flesh sizzled and began to seal itself into a tangle of scar tissue. Once the wound finished healing, Hunter stood again and angled its body toward me. It lifted the remaining hand and snapped its thick, sharp fingers. The blade in my hand vanished and reappeared in Hunter's clutch. Maybe destroying another run would take that power away. It lunged at me and slid the blade across my throat. While Hunter usually killed me quickly, this time the wound was shallow enough that it took me minutes to bleed out. As the blood poured from my throat and mingled with the purple pool of Hunter's only inches away, I smiled. I was in agony, but I had learned something. After all these hundreds of times, I'd made it bleed. The disgusting little gremlin may be immune to any weapon I have, but now I knew its weapon could kill it. The following few deaths ended the same as most of my other experiences. Hunter never dropped the blade and I was never able to wrestle it away. My attempts to stand my ground and retrieve the weapon were futile. Hunter's arm had returned, but during the struggles, I could see something different about it now. A thick ring of gnarled flesh circled the arm that I had cut off. It had healed, but it left a permanent scar. I'm not sure exactly what this means for me. Some of my fear and despair have been replaced with a sliver of hope. Hunter can be hurt. Maybe it can be killed. It could end the loop. Anyway, I only have 2 minutes and 15 seconds left before the attic stairs drop down. I guess you could call this pass through the loop my break. No preparations have been made. Hunter will kill me quickly. That's fine. It takes time to leave these messages. I fear it, but I've accepted it. I left dozens of these messages over the last 100 loops. Each time I update it just a bit. Maybe this seems familiar to you. You may not remember, but perhaps something here seems familiar. This likely isn't the first time you've read this. Maybe it will save someone else if they end up trapped in this nightmare. Eventually, I'll succeed. It won't be soon, but I'm learning. The process is improving every time. I know how to hurt the thing. For now, I've got to go. Hunter will be here soon. Like I said, I've done this before.
John Daly here. You know what day it is?
Neither do I.
I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
I hope you enjoyed I've Done This Before, as written by Ryan Major, with the performance by Paul J. McSorley. Our second tale of the evening is written by Ryan Major and performed by me, Paul J. McSorley. When working the closing shift at a food service job, There is nothing worse than someone coming in right when you're closing up for the night. And the light of the moon can bring voracious appetites. Now, without further ado, I present to you Dinner with Malcolm. I first met Malcolm about a year ago. It was just after 10 p.m. on a slow night when the scuffed bell above the door clanged. My diner, Grandma's Kitchen, had just closed. I could remember flipping the open sign to closed, but it wasn't unusual for me to forget to lock the door. It was out on the edge of town without much going on, so I was never too concerned someone was going to walk in and rob the place. I was in the kitchen washing dishes when I heard the bell. A scraping noise echoed through the empty diner. Someone pulled one of the stools away from the old formica counter. I sighed deeply. It wasn't the latecomer's fault that I forgot to lock the door, but they could have read the damn sign. I always hated having to tell someone to leave. It was a small town, and a little bad word of mouth could drive down business. I dried my hands and tossed the dishcloth over the edge of the sink. The dishes would have to wait. If I didn't get the late customer out the door, it may have attracted others. Not that I didn't end up in the place till midnight anyway, but I always liked to trick myself into thinking I would go home at a reasonable hour. I pushed the swinging kitchen door open to see a square man in a long overcoat sitting at the counter. His shoulders were as broad as a refrigerator, and there wasn't much of a neck to speak of. A tight bun of brown and gray hair puffed out from the back of his head, and a neatly trimmed beard fell below the counter. His thick brows were furrowed, and he stared straight ahead. "Evening, pal," I called from the door. "Must have forgot to lock up at closing. We shut down at 10. Come on back tomorrow, and I'll cook you some eggs on the house for the inconvenience." The wall of a man turned his head toward me and nodded. "Didn't think you could see me," he responded. I paused for a moment, confused by what he said. "Yeah, I can see you," I replied curtly. "Trouble is, we ain't open right now. Glad to serve you tomorrow." His eyes drifted away from me and down to the laminated menu on the counter. He lifted a brutish arm and dropped it heavily on the counter, extending his thick finger toward the menu. The colossal digit hammered down onto the surface. "3 T-bone steaks cooked medium rare," he said. "2 baked potatoes, and 1 bottle of whatever beer you've got. I'm not picky." I felt my ears burning with anger. No one had ever accused me of being the friendliest guy around, but I had done my best to ask him politely to leave. I can still remember how gobsmacked I was when he had the audacity to make an order after I told him we were closed. "Mister," I spat, "I don't think you're catching what I'm throwing. We are closed. Get out. I'll call the damn sheriff." The huge man didn't stand up, but he did slide his hand into his overcoat. My heart leapt into my throat thinking he was about to pull a gun, but my fear subsided quickly when he pulled his hand back out. There was no weapon. He held a huge roll of cash.
$500 for the food," he said in a husky baritone. Thumbs the size of bratwurst pushed a few bills onto the counter, but he didn't look up. "You let me sit in here and eat for an hour. If the steak is cooked right and the beer's cold, I'll leave you a $100 tip. Give the money to the owner. Keep it for yourself. I don't care, but I'm hungry. So how about it?"
My eyes were as big as dinner plates as I looked at the pile of money on the counter. With the pandemic starting to slack off and businesses opening back up full time, I had expected better days. Truth be told, folks still weren't getting out like they used to. I was struggling. Shutting down the diner had crossed my mind a few times. I hadn't been in a position to turn down that kind of money. "That was 3 T-bones, 2 potatoes, and a beer?" I asked in a more cheerful tone.
"Coming right up, Chief."
"A reasonable man," he said.
I whipped up his order as fast as I could and took it out to the counter. As I put the plates down in front of the huge man, I got my first good look at him. He was even larger up close than he had seemed when I saw him from the kitchen door.
a wall of muscle and hair. His eyes were barely visible under the heavy tufts of eyebrows. The man looked almost like a mastiff. Without a word, he slid the money toward me and tucked into his meal. Not wanting to stand in silence while he ate, I went to the back to stuff money in my wallet. I realized I had forgotten his beer, so I hurried to the cooler and snagged a long neck. By the time I walked through the door, he had finished all the food. It couldn't have been more than 4 minutes since I had left, and the man had eaten 3 T-bone steaks and 2 baked potatoes. There wasn't a scrap of food left on the plate. Bewildered, I popped the cap from the beer and sat it in front of him. He picked it up and swallowed the whole thing without taking his lips from the bottle. When he was done, he put the bottle back on the counter and emitted a rumbling belch. "Must have tasted too good, huh?" I teased the man. "What do you mean?" he asked. His forehead creased, and I could hear the confusion in his voice. "It's a joke, buddy," I said. "Never seen a man eat that fast in my life." The corners of his thick mustache raised as a grin spread across his face. He laughed deeply. Fumbling into his overcoat again, the man pulled 2 more $100 bills out and dropped them on the counter. "I am always hungry," he said. "Never seems to go away. A good meal. Gave you a little extra for your trouble." "Thanks for the patronage, sir," I said. "Ain't been too many nights this good since the world went to hell, you know?" He gripped the bar with 2 massive hands and pushed himself up. I marveled at how tall he was. He must have been at least 7 feet, maybe more. He rubbed his stomach happily. "What days are you open?" he asked. "Tuesday to Saturday, my friend," I replied. I extended my hand toward him. "My name's Justin, by the way." He took my hand in his with a surprisingly gentle grip. "Mine is Malcolm." The man turned and lumbered toward the door. As he stepped out, he had to duck his head to miss the frame. "If you are so inclined, I'll be back this time each night. Same order, same pay. Get some fresh steaks for tomorrow. I could tell those were frozen." "You got it," I shouted as the door closed. I watched as the man crossed the street. I expected him to turn left or right and continue down the sidewalk, but he ducked his head under a tree branch and vanished into the woodline.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
"Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino."
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
After that night, Malcolm stopped by every evening at 10 p.m. I always flipped the sign to closed, but left the door unlocked for him. I would be washing dishes when the familiar clang of the bell let me know he had arrived. After a handful of visits, he even started bolting the door to save me the trouble. As soon as I heard the door, I would dry my hands off and throw the fresh steaks on the grill. With the sudden influx of cash, I didn't have to rely on buying the less expensive frozen cuts. If I'm honest, though, I only bought enough fresh cuts to feed him. Cash flow was better, but times were still tight. They were still the best days I had had in ages. I had managed to keep on Angela, my one and only waitress, through the pandemic. The rest of the staff had been laid off. It was difficult to make enough money at the time to keep the doors open, so the staff wasn't an option. Malcolm's sudden arrival changed that. A month after he started coming in, I was able to bring back my other 2 servers. 3 months in, and I was able to rehire my line cook, Dwayne. The diner was coming back to life, and it was all thanks to that bear of a man. I even told him about it one night. "Thanks to you, I'm able to hire my old staff back on," I told him as he gobbled down his meal. "Gonna feel nice not trying to keep this place afloat by myself."
"I am glad of it," he said between massive bites and rumbling belches. "Please, make sure they are gone before my arrival."
"Will do, big man," I replied. "Any reason?" Malcolm stopped eating and peered forward,
lost in thought.
I am a private person, Justin, he replied. While I do enjoy our discussions while I eat, the additional company may be too much for me. If you need additional financial motivation to make that happen, I will be glad to oblige.
He began to reach into his coat for that never-ending wad of money.
No, 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 I protested. You're already paying me an unreasonable amount of money to dine in privacy. Wouldn't ask a damn thing more from you. So I did just that.
About 15 minutes before closing, I sent the crew home. I paid them their full shift's wage, but the small window of time made sure that Malcolm had the joint to himself without worry. It was a win-win. Everything had seemed so much better 6 months after the mysterious behemoth arrived, but the newfound peace of mind didn't last long. On a night around 6 months ago, as Malcolm vanished into the tree line, I decided to step out of the front door to have a cigarette. It was a cool night, and the breeze was a welcome change from the stifling heat of the kitchen. I didn't smoke very often anymore, but when the urge hit me, I would sneak the stale pack I kept hidden from the top of the walk-in freezer. Just seemed like a good night. While I watched the dancing curls of smoke drift away under the streetlight, something began moving around in the brush in the woods across the street. I squinted my eyes to try to get a better view of what it could be, but nothing appeared. My mind told me it was probably just Malcolm moving around, but he vanished behind the trees 10 minutes before. He had never come back on the same night after he left the diner. The butt of my cigarette had just hit the ground when I saw the two piercing yellow eyes in the woods beyond. I've seen hundreds of beady little eyes in the darkness throughout my life, but those were the most unsettling. They didn't narrow or blink, just two perfectly round yellow orbs floating in the darkness.
Go on, I yelled. Nothing to see here. Head on back where you came from.
The yellow orbs remained, locked onto me. A lump piled in my throat. My eyes darted to the ground, and I saw a few decent-sized rocks in the grass beside the road. I leaned over and scooped a few into my hand.
Get out of here, I yelled again to no effect. I said, go on.
I chucked one of the rocks, and to my surprise, it landed with a hard thud a few feet in front of the set of glowing eyes. It still didn't blink. Just gazed down at the rock I had thrown. My gut told me to get my ass back inside, but something held me in place. I felt like I couldn't move. Somewhere in the back of my brain, a little voice started talking to me. If you run, it'll follow. If you hide, it'll find you. My stomach was in knots, and I felt like I might get sick. Never could I remember a time I wanted to run so much. No matter how hard I pulled at my legs, my feet refused to leave the ground. The yellow eyes had lost interest in the rock and returned their piercing gaze toward me. I hesitated for a moment, but decided to throw another rock. My arm curled behind my back like a major league pitcher and blasted forward, throwing the rock with all of my might. The stone zoomed through the air and landed squarely between the hateful yellow eyes. To my shock, they vanished for just a moment as the thing blinked. Just as I was beginning to mentally celebrate landing such an accurate shot, the eyes blinked back open. A low growl filled the cool night air. For a moment, I thought it may be a wolf or coyote, but the tone was far too low. I had heard wolves and coyotes my entire life. It sounded like a diesel truck idling roughly from the woods. The depth of the tone made my bones feel like they were shaking. More rustling came from the woods. Dozens of sets of the same hateful yellow eyes emerged. The growling grew into a chorus. Snarls and the snaps of muscular jaws joined to create a symphony of nightmares. In unison, the horde of yellow eyes began to move forward. I tried in vain to spark my body into motion, but I remained anchored to the sidewalk. In a few more steps, the things would have been in the streetlights. Just then, one of the things began to whimper in agony. I could hear something heavy rumbling through the trees and the sound of something large hitting the ground. Snaps of branches and underbrush followed. No longer hypnotized by my presence, the countless set of eyes turned into the woods. I could hear them moving toward the howls of pain. I fell backward and nearly tumbled through the glass of the door.
My feet were freed, but I wasn't prepared. In a panic, I turned and opened the door before spilling forward on the cold tile. With a great deal of effort, I crawled toward the door and slammed the deadbolt in place before scurrying into the kitchen. Standing behind the swinging door, I looked through the porthole at the large panel window that sat at the front of the diner. There was no sign of movement, no sign of whatever horrendous things had been outside in the woods. As I stood there peering out, I noticed my legs were cold. I had pissed my pants and never felt it. All control of my body had vanished when I was staring into those hateful eyes. After an hour of hiding, I decided it was time to head home. There had been no signs of activity outside. I was terrified and uncomfortable. The truck was near the back door, and I hoped I could make it before anything saw me. I made a mad dash to the truck and threw myself in haphazardly. My keys must have fallen to the mat a half dozen times before I managed to get them in the ignition. When my headlights burst into life, they landed on four squat, hairy figures, and I nearly screamed. It was a pack of dogs eating scraps that had fallen out of the dumpster. Was that all it had been? A few starving mutts in the woods had stopped to watch me smoke a cigarette, and my mind had turned it into a madman's carnival? I burst into laughter. There I sat, a grown man who hid in his diner for God knows how long in piss-filled pants because a few hungry dogs had stopped to watch him. The whimpering and the howls? Two of them must have gotten into a fight. My mind had probably made up the rest of the noises. I'd never felt so damn stupid. I pulled the truck around the side of the diner and onto the street toward my house. What a night. I tossed a final glance back toward the streetlight in front of the diner. Something was there. It looked like Malcolm standing just at the edge of the woods. Malcolm continued coming around for his evening meal, and I kept collecting my unreasonable payment. It had crossed my mind a dozen times to ask him if he had seen me driving away that night I saw the things in the woods. I wondered why he was back in front of the diner. I wondered if I had just convinced myself I hadn't seen something unnatural. I never asked. I was afraid speaking it into life would make it real, turn it into something worse. I also worried that my largest paying customer may not like me checking up on him. So I just kept cooking the steaks and taking the money. He kept eating them. No one asked questions. I didn't see the eyes anymore, but it always felt like something was watching me after that night. The diner wasn't in the middle of the country, but it was on the outskirts of town. The lot directly across the street was undeveloped and covered in trees. On the sides of the diner sat an antique store and a barbershop, both closed around 5 p.m. My staff wasn't allowed to take the trash out alone anymore. It annoyed the hell out of them, but I put my foot down. While I wasn't convinced that the four stray dogs were what I had seen in the woods, I told the staff to be wary of them. They laughed, but I didn't care. Two people to the dumpster and back, no exceptions. At the end of the shift, I always had Dwayne walk the girls to the car when he left. I wished I could go with them to save myself the lonely walk to my truck, but I couldn't leave. Malcolm would be coming in for his regular meal, and I counted on that cash to keep everything afloat. One night as he ate, I mentioned the dogs to Malcolm. "I see you walking into the woods every night," I said. "I've seen some stray dogs around here. You ever see anything like that when you leave?" He dropped his fork to his plate and lifted his squinted face toward me. "You've seen dogs, or you've seen something else, Justin?" "Dogs, man," I replied. "At least I think they were dogs. Big ass yellow eyes. Size of damn dinner plates, it looked like. Dozens of them, lined up in the woods that you walked through. That's why I figured you may have seen them." "Careful in those woods, Justin," he rumbled. "Dangerous things out there. Best not to go out front at night." He tossed the money on the counter and started toward the door. "You know what it was, don't you?" I asked as he continued walking. "Why the hell don't you tell me?" "That's the trouble with humans," he replied in annoyance. "You think you want to know something, but once you find out, you wish you never did." He walked out and vanished into the woods. Malcolm started eating his meals in silence. Since the night I asked him about the creatures in the woods, our conversations became less and less frequent until they didn't happen at all. I fixed his dinner, and he ate without a word. He still left the money on the counter, so I kept going. Dwayne called in sick one day and left me to man the kitchen on my own. It hadn't been so difficult a few months ago, but now people felt more comfortable getting out and business was increasing at a fairly rapid rate. The dinner rush was finally dropping to a trickle, which turned out to be handy. Angela stepped to the back to answer a phone call around 6 p.m. Turned out to be her son. He had gotten sick at a friend's house, and Ange needed to leave early to pick him up. I told her to head out and take care of the kid. I'd watch the diner. Everything was pretty smooth sailing that night until I remembered the mountain of trash bags sitting by the back door. I'd meant to take them out with Ange when she was still here, but it had slipped my mind. My diner was my pride, and I didn't want to leave garbage sitting around, but it was already dark, and I didn't want to risk running into whatever the hell had been hiding in the woods. I hadn't seen the damn things again, but I knew they were still out there. I could feel them every time I went outside. It was 8:15 p.m. when the phone rang again. I answered it and delighted to hear the voice of my old friend Mike from the next town over. He ran a good little greasy spoon of his own and we liked to talk shop from time to time. "Justin, just a heads up," Mike said in a serious tone. "Old Lou from the health department is out making surprise inspections. No one gave their good buddy Mike a heads up, but I'm helping you out, my friend. Dumb bastard knocked a point off my score for having my sanitation buckets 2 degrees low. 2 degrees, Justin. Now that big 99 score is going to sit in the window till he comes back. Some people." I laughed. "Lou is a hard ass, but he's decent enough. You think he's swinging this way?" "Who knows, my boy," he belted. "Just a word to the wise. If you're storing raw chicken in the desk drawer, may want to put it away, huh?" He laughed and hung up the phone. After hanging up the phone, I started tidying up the diner. Lou probably wouldn't come to the diner that night, but it was hard to say. Our county was small, and if he had already hit Mike's with a surprise inspection, there was a decent chance he would come to my diner. Didn't take me long to remember the massive pile of garbage at the back door. The rest of the diner had been in good shape, but a mountain of trash was sure to catch a health inspector's attention quickly. I dreaded the thought of having to haul it to the dumpster, but I couldn't risk letting it sit there if Lou showed up. I pushed the back door open and scanned the parking lot and field behind the diner. My truck sat under the light post to the left, and the dumpster was under the light post to the right. The field beyond was as black as anything I'd ever seen, but there were no signs of movement or a hint of those hateful yellow eyes. With a great sense of dread, I began to pile the bags into a sloppy stack on top of the overflowing rolling cans. I had no intention of making 2 trips. In and out, no round trip. The plastic wheels rumbled loudly on the pavement as I hauled them toward the dumpster. When I reached it, I slid the side door open to toss in the bags. The sound of metal squealing against metal made me cringe. If my goal had been stealth, I had failed miserably. Everything in a mile radius would know I was there. After I tossed in the last bag, my eyes scanned the field again. Still no signs of movement, no eyes, no growling. My pulse finally began to drop back to normal and I grabbed the rolling garbage cans to head back to the diner. When I turned around, under the light above the back door, there was a creature standing on 4 legs. It stood as tall as the bed of my pickup and its frame rippled with muscles. Pale green skin covered its body, punctuated with bristly black hairs. There was no discernible head, but 2 bulbous yellow eyes and a ragged maw of teeth split the area between the thing's shoulders. It snarled and barked. It wasn't exactly a bark, but I'm not sure what else to call it. Thick red drool flowed from the toothy mouth onto the asphalt below. I began to back away from the nightmare abomination and move toward my truck, swatting my pocket for the keys as I went. My heart nearly burst when the alarm from my truck began to blast. I turned my head to see another of the hellhounds standing in the bed of my truck, clawed feet propping themselves on the cab. It grunted and turned its face toward me as though sniffing the air with unseen nostrils. My feet froze again. I couldn't move.
I felt as helpless as the night I had seen the things watching me from the woods. The hellhound from the truck jumped down and lowered itself to the ground, readying itself to pounce. I looked toward the beast at the door, and it was moving forward in the same posture. I began to scream for help, but I knew none would come. My eyes closed, and I started to pray for a quick death. The hot breath from the hounds was panting on my hand when I heard one of them cry out in pain. I wanted to open my eyes, but the pained howl made me wince and close my eyes even tighter. There was a sudden dry snap like the cracking of ice, followed by a heavy thud. Another of the hellhounds was snarling and snapping its powerful jaw.
"I've been waiting for you," I heard a familiar voice say. "Expected more of you to come, but I'll take what I can get."
I opened my eyes to see Malcolm standing before me, one hellhound on the ground at his feet, purple liquid leaking from its mouth. The other circled him warily, seeking an opportunity to strike at the huge man. Malcolm turned in a circle with the hound, arms out in a grappling stance. The hellhound crouched deeply and leapt forward towards the big man. Malcolm held out a meaty arm, and the creature sank its teeth into his flesh. It thrashed wildly, but Malcolm's squinted expression never changed. He lifted the thing on his arm high in the air and brought it crashing down onto the parking lot. A muffled whimper escaped the beast, but it maintained its hold. The big man began to rain blows onto the creature, compressing it between the meaty fist and the asphalt beneath. An eruption of purple blood spilled from the corners of its mouth, and its muscles shuddered as Malcolm pulverized the thing's internal organs. It began to breathe raggedly before releasing its jaws from his arm. Malcolm stood up straight and brought his boot down on the beast's face with a sickening crunch. Before I had a chance to speak, Malcolm lifted one of the beasts above him and turned his head toward the sky. His face became long and his mouth grew wide. The bushy beard and eyebrows that had always covered his face stretched and revealed a set of bulbous yellow eyes and a mouth filled with dagger-like teeth. He shoved one of the hounds in and swallowed it whole. His massive torso bulged as he bent to pick up the second hound. It slid into the nightmarish mouth and his stomach bulged further. His jaw contracted and the skin of his face tightened again, hiding the vicious mouth and yellow eyes. He turned to me and held up a hand to greet me as though he had just noticed I was there.
"Followed the pack here about a year ago," he said matter-of-factly. "They took a special interest in you. Not everyone can see us. My kind only feeds on those that can."
My jaw fell slack and my legs turned to jelly. I was no longer fastened to the ground and promptly fell backward. The big man walked toward me and held out a hand to help me up.
What the hell are you?" I stammered in fear. "Same thing as them, though I change up my appearance a bit," he said as he rubbed his stomach with glee. "They crave the flesh of those who can see them. I'm a bit of an outcast. Developed a liking for the taste of my kind. I follow the pack until they find a human to hunt. One that can see them. I'll hang around for a bit and wait for them to make a move. Then I pick a few off. The stakes keep the hunger at bay, but I need a true meal every year or two."
I was bait?" I spat. "You use me as bait?"
"If that's how you want to look at it," he said as he began to walk away. "The pack will move on now. I stick around for a few weeks to make sure they don't come back for you. Then I'll move on myself, catch up with them, and get ready for my next meal."
Malcolm, swollen with his hellish feast, wobbled toward the corner of the diner to make his way to the trees across the road. He turned and faced me before letting out an earth-shaking belch.
"Won't be needing the steaks tonight, Justin," he said jovially, "but I'll leave some money on the counter. See you tomorrow."
I hope you enjoyed Dinner with Malcolm, as written by Ryan Major and performed by Paul J. McSorley. Both of tonight's tales were provided to us by our friends at Valox. You can find more from this author and many others
by visiting www.veloxbooks.com. That's VeloxBooks.com. You won't be sorry that you did. On to the shows. Longtime resident Otis Gyre has his very own show here on our network, Scary Stories Told in the Dark, which you can hear every Sunday night. We also have Eric Peabody's Horror Hill, a podcast dedicated to some of our deeper and darker tales. We hope you check him out. And Drew Blood's Dark Tales airs Fridays, featuring some Southern down-home horror. And don't forget to check out the Fear from the Heartland archives, featuring more than 120 episodes. Well, friends, our weekly descent into the depths has just about come to a close. But before we go, I'd like to take a moment to thank you for joining us tonight and remind you to take a moment to stop by our iTunes page and leave Chilling Tales for Dark Nights a 5-star review and a kind word. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram if you haven't already. And of course, subscribe to us on YouTube, where you can find an archive of our work going back to 2012. And consider signing up as a patron at our website, chillingtalesfordarknights.com, to show your support and get all of our content ad-free. I'm your host of the evening, Paul J. McSorley, and it's been a pleasure. Tune in again next week when we once again turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Sweet dreams, listener. Sweet dreams.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.